The following is a tape recording of the 1963 Newbery Caldecott Awards dinner program, which was held in the International Room of the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Chicago, Illinois, on Monday evening, July 15, 1963. The presiding officer is Miss Barbara Moody of the Enoch Pratt Free Library, Baltimore, Maryland, and president of the Children's Services Division of the American Library Association, the organization that administers the awards. Mrs. Ruth Galliardo of the Kansas State Teachers Association, vice president and president-elect of the Children's Services Division, and thereby chairman of the Newbery Caldecott Awards Committee, makes the presentation of the medals to the winning artist and author. Acceptance speeches are given by Ezra Jack Keats, who receives the Caldecott Medal for the illustrations in his book, The Snowy Day, published by the Viking Press, Incorporated, and by Madeline Lengle, winner of the Newbery Medal, for her book, A Wrinkle in Time, published by Farrar, Straus and Company. Although there are a record 1,509 people here tonight, this is really one too few. All of us wish very much that Frederick G. Melcher were with us. It is difficult to express two or four, all of you here tonight, the extent of the love and respect all of us have had for Mr. Melcher, the creator of the idea of the Newbery and Caldecott Awards and the donor of the medals. We've wondered how you would like to do this, and we think maybe you would like to stand a moment in tribute to the memory of Mr. Melcher. Would you stand? We stand in salute to Frederick G. Melcher, to his vision and his wisdom, his perspicacity and his astuteness, his kindness and his good humor, his generosity of means and spirit. Perhaps our best tribute to him will be to keep these qualities alive to the best of our own abilities in our own work with children and their books and their libraries. And it is my pleasure to announce that the ALA and the Children's Services Division gratefully accept the communication from Mr. Daniel Melcher, his expression of his willingness to continue the provision of the medals and to carry out the traditional hosting of the announcement ceremonies. Dan, won't you take a bow a minute? Please. I know there are many more thoughts in our hearts than these few minutes have allowed us to say. And now I am very happy to present to you Mrs. Ruth Galliardo, who is Vice President, President-elect of the Children's Services Division, and by that token, the Chairman of the Newbery Caldecott Awards Committee for this year, who will present to you the people whom you have been really waiting to hear from.
Moody, President Bryan, honored guests, members and friends of the American Library Association. And now we come to the last for which the first was made 40 years ago by Frederick G. Melcher, one of childhood's best friends. In 1935, when the Caldecott Medal was first presented, 300 were present. Tonight, as Miss Moody has told you, there are nine over 1,500. Representing not children's work alone, but happily every field of librarianship and publishing. Here tonight we have in truth that coordination of communities without which, R.G. Blakely says in one of the coming conference background papers, a library cannot fulfill its role. Communities being interpreted as national, state, city, institutions, family, or individuals. Just as tomorrow and on through Thursday, all the librarians here, whatever their field of specialization, will focus attention upon one of our profession's most troubling problems. So tonight, we gather together to honor the creators of two distinguished books chosen by school and children's librarians. Promoted, I should like to add, in community after community by a longtime ALA friend and partner, the National Congress of Parents and Teachers. The National President, by her presence here, demonstrates that coordination of communities, which Mr. Blakely urges us to seek. But cooperation cannot be legislated any more than learning can. If one of our goals is to help our readers seek the eternal in the temporal, as the historian Marshall Fishwick suggests, then we must turn to the humanities and to the arts. Only so can we distinguish between reality and appearance. Only so can we discover what life really is. Some things can never be wholly explained, but we can say with Walt Whitman, as Fishwick reminds us, that every cubic inch of space is a miracle. It is this our Caldecott winner has stated so simply and so convincingly in his illustrations for his own book, Snowy Day. Here is any child, here is every child, experiencing one of life's loveliest miracles, first snow, and transmitting that delight to children and grown-ups alike. And so, Ezra Keats, it is a real honor to present to you for the American Library Association the Randolph Caldecott Medal for your illustrations in The Snowy Day, published by the Viking Press and named the most distinguished children's book, picture book, in 1962. And I give you Ezra Keats.
I am very happy to be here to receive this great honor for a book which means so much to me, a book which led me into new avenues of expression. I would like to tell you how The Snowy Day was done and how I arrived at the technique used in it. However, it would be more accurate to say that I rather found myself participating in the evolvement of the book. First, let me tell you about its beginnings. Years ago, long before I ever thought of doing children's books, while looking through a magazine, I came upon four candid photos of a little boy about 3 or 4 years old. His expressive face, his body attitudes, the very way he wore his clothes totally captivated me. And so I clipped a strip of photos and stuck it on my studio wall, where it stayed for quite a while, and then it was put away. As the years went by, these pictures would find their way back to my walls, offering me fresh pleasure at each encounter. In more recent years, while illustrating children's books, the desire to do my own story about this little boy began to germinate. Up he went again, this time above my drawing table. He was my model and inspiration. Finally, I began work on The Snowy Day. When the book was finished and on the presses, I told Mrs. Duff, whose guidance and empathy has been immeasurable, about my long association with this little boy. How many years was it? I went over to Life magazine and had it checked. To my astonishment, they informed me that I had found them 22 years ago. Now for the technique. I had no idea as to how the book would be illustrated, except that I wanted to add a few bits of patterned paper to supplement the painting. As work progressed, one swatch of material suggested another, and before I realized it, each page was being handled in a style I had never worked in before. A strange sequence of events came into play. I worked and waited. Then, quite unexpectedly, I would come across just the appropriate material for the page I was working on. For instance, one day I visited my art supply shop looking for a sheet of off-white paper to use for the bed linen in the opening pages. Before I could make my request, the clerk said, "We just received some wonderful Belgian canvas. I think you'd like to see it." I hadn't painted on canvas for years, but there he was displaying a huge roll of canvas. It had just the right color and texture for the linen. I bought a narrow strip, leaving a puzzled clerk wondering what strange shape of picture I planned to paint. The creative efforts of people from many lands contributed to the materials in the book. Some of the papers used for the collage came from Japan, some from Italy, some from Sweden, many from our own country. The mother's dress is made of the kind of oilcloth used for lining cupboards. I made a big sheet of snow texture by rolling white paint over wetting some paper and achieved the effect of snowflakes by cutting patterns out of gum erasers, dipping them into paint, and then stamping them onto the pages. The gray background for the pages where Peter goes to sleep were made by spattering Indian ink with a toothbrush. Friends would enthusiastically discuss the things they did as children in the snow. Others would suggest nuances of plot or a change of a word here or there. All of us wanted so much to see little Peter marching through these pages, experiencing in the purity and innocence of childhood the joys of a first snow. I can honestly say that Peter came into being because we wanted him, and I hope that, as the scriptures say, a little child shall lead them, and he will show in his own way the wisdom of a pure heart.